We are having a wonderful time as we continue studying through God's Word through the book of Leviticus. And today we're in the seventh lesson in the book of Leviticus, and we happen to be in Leviticus chapter 10 if you want to get out your Bibles and follow along with us there. Now, all the instructions and all the laws concerning the offerings to the Lord had already been given. And the priestly system was in place. The priest had been ordained. And Moses had trained them himself there on that first day of the ordination process. But before we go on into chapter 10, I would like for us to take one last law review concerning the offerings, just for good measure. And I promise you it will be our last time. And any other time after this, we will just simply refer us back to our notes previously. But for one last time, let's go over them again. Now, if I want you to remember this, the place of the offering of the animals and the agriculture, that be the grain, the flour, and all that, that was brought as an offering to the tent of meeting and to the brazen altar, regardless of the kind of offering it was, regardless if it was a burnt, a sacrifice of peace, a sin, a guilt, or an ordination offering, or even a grain offering, the offering was always presented at exactly the same place, no matter which offering it was. So, for example, if the offering was from the herd, that means it was a male or a female bull or cow, oxen, without defect, it was presented at the door of the tent of meeting. Now, if the offering was from the flock, and it was a male or a female goat, a male or a female sheep without defect, it was presented at the north side of the brazen altar. If the offering was from the flock of a turtle dove or young pigeons without defect, it was presented on the west side of the brazen altar. And if the offering was a grain with oil and incense without defect, it was presented on that same west side of the brazen altar, just the same place that the birds were offered. And another thing here I want to point out is in any case, no matter what we're talking about, anything that is placed on the brazen altar is always completely consumed as a soothing aroma to the Lord on the brazen altar. Nothing is cooked there to be taken off to be eaten. Once it goes on the brazen altar, it is to totally be consumed down to ashes. Now, none of this ever changes. It is always the same for whatever kind of animal it is or agriculture. Birds and grain go on the west side of the altar. Goats and sheep, ram, goats and sheep go on the north side of the altar. Bulls, cows, oxen, they go at the door of the tent of meeting. Okay, now, that's the place of the offerings. Now, the presentation of the offerings, I want to talk to you about that. In all cases, regardless of the kind of animal that is being offered, once that animal is at the door, at the proper place, at the door, at the north side, or at the west side, the person who brings that animal to be offered places his hands on that animal and symbolically transfers from that person to that animal the reason that animal is being brought to the offering, be it sin, be it guilt, or whatever. Then the animal is slain and the blood is sprinkled according to the special instructions to be listed in each of the offerings that we're fixing to cover. And sometimes it's sprinkled around the brazen altar. Sometimes it's taken into the tent of meeting where it's sprinkled in front of the veil and a little rubbed on each of the four corners of the altar of incense. Sometimes outside, when it's sprinkled around the brazen altar, it's rubbed up on the four corners of the altar. Sometimes it's not. It all depends on the type of offering that it is. So, the initial part of the place and the presentation never changes. It is always the same for every offering. Okay, so we've talked about the place, We've talked about the presentation. Now we want to talk about the procedures. So, picking up with each of the offerings, we're going to start with the burnt offering. I want to go over it one more time with you just very quickly. Each of these offerings has specific details concerning the offering, but I want you to catch on again and see the cadence and the rhythm of how things flow. So in the burnt offering, which we learned in chapter 1, it was always to be a male oxen, a male sheep, or a male goat. Now, after being presented and it being slain, the priest would catch some of the blood and sprinkle it around the brazen altar, and then he'd stoke the fire. That's the way it always happened in a burnt offering. The person who's bringing the offering would then skin that animal and cut it up into pieces. And on a burnt offering, the insides and the legs were always washed in the basin of water, and they were put up, they were handed to the priest, who would then put them on the brazen altar. Everything except for the hide, okay? Everything except for the hide and the burnt of that animal was placed on that brazen altar to be totally consumed. So burnt offering means everything burns except for the hide. Entrails, legs get washed and then get put on the altar. The rest of the meat, the head and everything gets put on the altar to be totally burned. But the hide belongs to the priest. That's a burnt offering. Now, the instructions for the birds. The birds was a little different. The priest would, that animal would be presented, and the bird would take and wring the neck off the bird. The blood he would begin to sprinkle around the brazen altar. The wings would be torn off, not cut. The feathers and the contents of the crop would be thrown over in the ash pile where the coals and everything fall out of the brazen altar where they're collected to get rid of, but there they will cook down in there and be destroyed. And the animal is placed on the brazen altar, but it's a burnt offering, so that means the animal's placed there to be totally consumed. That's the birds on the brazen altar. Now, chapter 2, we talked about grain offerings. So we've moved from burnt offerings now to grain offerings. The fine flour, fine meaning of the best seeds that are out there, okay? It's the quality of the grain that has been crushed. With its oil and with its incense is brought to the west side of the brazen altar and it's handed to the priest. Now the ingredients can come raw, baked, griddle cooked, pan cooked, or roasted. No leaven, no honey is allowed, okay? No leaven, no honey. The priest then takes a handful of the mixture or the cakes or whatever it's been brought. He takes a handful of it and he puts it up on the brazen altar for it to be totally consumed, and he adds a little salt on top of it. The remaining grain offering belongs to the priest to go and eat. If it's already cooked, he can eat it the way it is. If it's not cooked, he has to cook it up. If it's the raw ingredients, he has to cook it up. Chapter 3 takes us to the sacrifice of peace offering. And so the instructions is for a male or a female, doesn't male or female, with the sacrifice of peace offering. It's not just a male, it can be male or female, oxen, bull or cow, sheep or goat. So the priest will catch some of the blood when it is sacrificed in its proper place. He'll sprinkle it around the brazen altar. Everything looks the same. And then he stokes the fire. The person bringing the offering then skins the animal, cuts it all up in pieces, and the fat portions of that animal, which is with the kidneys and the liver and all that, are then given to the priest who places them on the brazen altar. The hide and the rest of the animal flesh belongs to the priest to take and to eat. That's the sacrifice of the peace offering. Now, the sin offering that we learned about in chapter 4, there were some purposes for the sin offering, so we have to divide this up into a couple of sections here. The purposes for the sin offering, if it was for an unintentional sin of a priest who brings guilt on the people, if it's an unintentional sin of the whole nation that brings guilt on the people, if it's the unintentional sin of a leader who brings guilt on himself, or the unintentional sin of a common person who brings guilt on himself, then there are specific things that have to happen. Now, in each of those cases that I've just mentioned, it was to be a male bull. So if he needed to bring something, it was to be a male bull for those reasons. The priest takes the blood that he's caught. He takes it inside the tent of meeting. He sprinkles it 7 times in front of the veil, which is in front of the Ark of the Covenant. He rubs some on the 4 corners of the altar of incense in front of the veil. The priest pours the rest of the blood at the bottom of the brazen altar where the coals and the ashes are, and he stokes the fire. The person who brought the sacrifice removes the fat portions. The fat portions of the animal are given to the priest, who places them on the altar where they are totally consumed. The rest of the animal, including the hide, is taken out of the camp to a clean place to be burned. Okay, here's the camp. They're doing this right inside this temple complex, about right where the end word complex is. And because it's a sin offering, nothing is kept for the priest on this sin offering. Nothing. That's a difference in that. Burn offering, priest gets the hide. Sacrifice of peace offering, priest gets all the flesh that's left over after the fat portions and all of that. Here, because this is a sin offering, once the fat portions are offered, the head, the hide, everything else is taken out of the complex to a clean place outside the camp where it is burned to a crisp, down to ashes, someplace outside. Now, if the people bring, that was for male bull, if the people bring a female goat or a lamb, this is for the leaders. You see, the bull is for the priest. I should have told you that already. That bull that we just talked about was for the priest. Now here we're talking about a female goat or lamb for the leaders or for the common people. They could bring a female goat or a lamb. The priest rubs blood on the 4 corners of the brazen altar. For a leader or a common people, he doesn't take it into the tent of meeting to sprinkle it in front of the veil. He does the same thing. He rubs it on the 4 corners of the brazen altar. He doesn't sprinkle it around the brazen altar like the others. In this one, he simply rubs it on the 4 corners of those 4 horns on the brazen altar, and then he pours the rest of the blood out at the base of the brazen altar in the coals and the ashes. And the person bringing the offering removes the fat. The fat is given to the priest, who places it on the brazen altar, and the total rest of the animal, including the hide, the flesh and everything, the head, whatever, is taken outside the camp to be burned. Now, in chapter 5, that's the sin offering. In chapter 5, we come to the guilt offering. And so the guilt offering had some special purposes for guilt offering. The intentional sin of failing to come forth once you have been sworn in as a witness against sin. The intentional sin of touching something unclean. And the intentional sin of swearing thoughtlessly with your lips. Okay, so if it's one of those things that you've done, then you're to bring a female lamb or goat as a sin offering. The person bringing the goat must do something. It's a guilt offering. He must confess his sin. None of the other offerings required confession. Here he has to confess his sin, puts his hands on the animal, transfers his sin, When the animal is slain, the priest sprinkles the blood around, catches some of it, sprinkles the blood around the brazen altar. The priest pours the rest of the blood at the base of the brazen altar where the coals and the ashes are. And the person who is bringing the animal removes all the fat portions. Fat portions are given to the priest. The priest puts them on the brazen altar to be totally consumed. And all the rest of the animal, including the hide, belongs to the priest. Now, there's a second option. If you can't afford a lamb or a goat, then you could bring 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons. So for the first dove that comes, this is in a guilt offering, the person must bring that offering and he must confess his sin. The head of that first bird is broken backwards, but it's not torn off. not like it was before. The blood of the bird is the front of it is kind of snipped where blood can come out, but it's not the head is still attached, and the blood is poured out on the side of the brazen altar. The wings are torn off, but they're not cut off. The feathers are taken away, as well as the crop. You know where they go. They go at the east side of the brazen altar, down where the coals and the ashes are. The animal is placed on the brazen altar where it is totally consumed. Nothing is eaten of it. The second of those birds, the person must again confess his sin, and the priest wrings that neck off and takes the head off. And the blood is sprinkled around the brazen altar. The wings are torn off, not cut, but torn off. The feathers and the crop are gathered, and of course you know where that goes. It goes over into the coals and the ashes of the brazen altar. And the animal is placed on the brazen altar to be totally consumed. So the person who's bringing the grain offering, because they're poor, can surely afford a pint of fine flour. Okay, so he brings in a pint of fine flour of grain. It can come in dry, or it can come in with oil, or it can be raw, it can be baked, or it can be pan-griddled. And the priest takes a handful of that, and he throws it on the brazen altar, and the rest of the grain, as with the grain offering, belongs to the priest. Now, there's another purpose for the guilt offering. Two different purposes, though. We had three before, now we've got two more. The second purpose for the guilt offering, which becomes more expensive to the people, is the intentional sin of unfaithful acts against holy things, and the intentional sin of acts unaware. And we described that back in that lesson. Well, the instructions for this is, you are to bring a ram. Now remember, a ram is an expensive animal. It's the leading animal. You're giving away the animal that leads all the other animals, the sheep that leads all the other. It's a male sheep. It's a ram. And the person bringing it must do something. It's a guilt offering. He must confess his sins. And the priest is going to place a value on that ram according to the value of the sanctuary silver shekel, shekels that can be brought to pay for things, to give to, in money to the tabernacle, had to be a shekel. And so the priest had set a value on that ram at whatever the going value was. Ram is worth $100. He has to give $25 to the priest. And then the priest, after the ram is slain, takes some of the blood, he puts it around the brazen altar. The rest of the blood is poured out at the base of the altar where the coals and the ashes are, and he stokes the fire. The person bringing the offering removes the fat portions. The fat portions go to the priest. The priest puts them on the brazen altar. The rest of the animal, including the hide, was given to the priest. Whew. And then the offering that was brought to us during the ordination of Aaron and the priest was a 8-day process. And on the first day, we are introduced to the ordination offering, of which a bull calf, two rams, and a basket of unleavened bread was brought for the sins, for the sin offerings and for the burnt offerings for the ordination of the tabernacle complex and Aaron and his sons as priests. So Aaron and his sons as priests are anointed with oil first by Moses. Moses is in charge on this first day. He is acting as the priest because he's the leader and he's got the instructions. And he's showing and teaching Aaron and his sons how to do all this. So Aaron and his sons are anointed with this oil on their heads, actually poured oil on his heads. And then they are put into the priestly garments. The calf was brought. The calf for the sin offering was brought. The laying on of hands occurred to transfer the sin. The calf was slain, skinned, and cut up. The blood was sprinkled around the brazen altar and rubbed on the four corners of the horn. A little different than the sin offering before. The rest of the blood was poured out at the base of the altar where the coals and the ashes are. The fat was offered, and the rest of the animal, including the hide, was taken outside the camp to be burned. It's a sin offering. Sin offerings, everything ends up, that's not put on the brazen altar, always ends up outside the camp where it is totally burned out there. So, then we come, that's for the calf. Now we come to the ram, the first ram. The first ram was offered on the north side of the brazen altar, where all rams, sheep, and goats are offered. No change. Laying on of hands occurs. The ram was slain, skinned, cut up. Blood was caught, sprinkled around the brazen altar, not rubbed on the four horns this time. The legs, because this is for a burnt offering, it's not rubbed on the four horns. Sin offerings rubbed on the four horns. Burnt offerings are not, because this is the ram for the burnt offering. The legs and the entrails are washed, placed on the brazen altar. All the rest of the animal was also put on the brazen altar, and the hide was given to the priest. The hide is never burnt on the brazen altar. It is always either given to the priest, or if it's going to be burnt, it's burnt outside the camp in whatever offering it is. Now the second ram is brought with the grain for a burnt offering for Aaron and his sons. As we can guess, the ram is offered where? The ram is offered at the north side of the brazen altar. Laying on of hands, transfer of sin, slain, skinned, cut up. Blood caught, placed on the right earlobe of the priest, the right thumb of the priest, all this is new, right big toe of the priest that's being ordained, and the rest of the blood is sprinkled around the basin altar, and what is left is poured out at the base of the altar in the coals and the ashes. The fat, which includes the fat of the tail, because it's a ram, remember sheep, rams, all types of sheep have a whole lot of fat on their tail. Goats don't. So the fat part, that fatty tail is also included in the fat if it's a sheep. If it's a goat, they don't do the tail. So the fat, including the tail of that sheep, and the right thigh of that sheep is presented to the priest, and the priest takes it, and he has it. The fat is going to be put on the altar, but we'll get to that in a minute. The grain offering is then offered for the ordination process, of which we talked about over in chapter 6, verses 19 through 23. And it's one cake, one cake with oil on it, and one wafer. And it was placed on both the fat, and one each was placed on the fat and on the thigh. Aaron and his sons then took the fat and the thighs, and they wave them before the Lord as what we are now hearing is called a wave offering. So because Moses is in charge, he then takes that fat and that right thigh and he puts them on top of the brazen altar, and there they are burnt, consumed completely to ashes. And all the rest of the animal was burnt to ashes on the brazen altar also, because it's a burnt offering, except the hide. Hide is never burnt inside the camp on the brazen altar. Now the garment of Aaron and of his sons were sprinkled with some of this blood that was left over and some anointing oil. And then the breast was taken, the fat was cut off of the breast, the fat was put onto the brazen altar. The breast was waved. It was given then to Moses, who went over and put it in a pot of boiling water and began to boil it. And all the rest of the meat, the cakes and the wafers were burned. Everything was burned. Everything that was left was burned. And then Aaron and his sons had been part of those offerings, and they went into the tent of meeting where they were to stay there for 7 days. On the 8th day, after the 7th day, they come out. The bull calf and a ram are presented for Aaron and his sons' sins and a burnt offering. So we got a calf for a sin offering, and we've got a ram for a burnt offering. So the bull calf was offered in the right place. The ram was offered in the right place as a burnt offering. And with the calf sin offering, the fat was offered on the brazen altar, and the rest was burned outside the camp because it's a sin offering. And with the ram, because it's a burnt offering, the hide was taken off and given to the priest, and the rest of the animals burnt on the brazen altar to ashes. So that happened on the 8th day. On that 8th day also, a sacrifice of peace, and a grain offering was offered for the people. So a male goat was brought for the sin offering. So the goat was offered in its proper place. Laying on of hands occurred. The goat was slain, skin cut up. Blood was sprinkled around the brazen altar, rubbed on the four corners because it's a sin offering. Fat was cut out and offered. And all the rest of the animal, because it's a sin offering, was burnt where? Outside the camp. It's a sin offering. Burnt outside the camp. It is not a guilt offering. Had it been a guilt offering, that the meat and everything would have been given to the priest. But it's not a guilt offering. It's a sin offering. So the goat is burned outside the camp. For the burnt offering, the lamb was offered on the north side. The calf was offered to the door of the tent of meeting. Laying on of hands occurred on both of them. Transfer of sin. Calf and lamb were slain, cut up, skinned, cut up. Blood was sprinkled around the brazen altar because it's a burnt offering. Not rubbed on the four corners because it's a burnt offering. Legs and entrails because it's a burnt offering were washed. The rest of the animal was put on the brazen altar to be totally consumed except for the hide. And so were the entrails and the legs totally consumed on the burnt offering. But the hide was given to the priest because it's a burnt offering. Now the ox and the ram are the sacrifice of the peace offering. We come to that. These six animals, these six offerings that are happening here. The ox calf was offered where? It's an ox. It's from the herd. Door of the tent of meeting. The ram, it's a sheep. Where is it offered? North side of the altar. Laying on of hands, transfer of sin. Both animals are slain. They're skinned. They're cut up. Because it's a peace offering, sprinkled around the brazen altar, not rubbed on the four horns. Fat portions removed, placed on the brazen altar. Fat of the breast was removed, placed on the brazen altar. The breast was then waved before the Lord as a wave offering, and they went and boiled it in the pot for the priest to eat. The rest of the animal was given to the priest to eat. The hide was also given to the priest. The grain offering that was occurred that day, the ingredients was a tenth of an ephah, that's about a pint of the fine flour. Then there was oil and incense were mixed together. It could be raw, it could be baked, it could be pan-fried, griddled, cooked in a pot, or roasted. No leaven or honey could be used. And the offering was handed to Moses. Actually, the offering in this was handed to Aaron. And on the west side of the brazen altar where they handed it to him, Moses took a handful of that grain and he placed it on the brazen altar as a remembrance, a memorial proportion of what had happened there that day. The rest of the grain was given to the priest to eat, to Aaron his priest. Because, listen, Moses was controlling on the first day and doing everything. And on that eighth day, which is where we all are now, Aaron was doing everything with the help of his sons. That rest of that grain offering was given to the priest to eat. And when the ordination service was over, and for the first time, Israel had high priest and four regular priests. Aaron was the high priest. The four regular priests were the sons of Aaron, was Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. We find that in Numbers chapter 3, verse 2. But on the eighth day, that eighth day that we're talking about, as the priests were finishing up the details of the offerings, remember they got stuff they got to do. They got to cook this stuff on fires and they got to cook the meat. They got to cook everything. After the stuff is on the brazen altar, they've got to clean everything up. They've got to do the incense. They've got everything they've got to do. They've got to finish up the ceremonies which take place because they've got stuff they've got to eat. It's got to be eaten with that day or the next day or whatever, depending on what it is. And in this case, it has to be eaten that day. So on this eighth day, as the priests were finishing up the details of the offerings, two of Aaron's sons were about to die on the very day, the eighth day, when they had come out of the tent of meeting after their ordination. They're fixing to do or about to do something terribly wrong. Now the record of their rebellion and death of these two sons of Aaron is found here in chapter 10 of Leviticus. But Numbers 3:3-4 also mentions this same rebellion because it's talking about there in Numbers is talking about this ordination. Nadab and Abihu used strange fire on the altar of incense. Now that's the altar inside of the Holy of Holy. That's the altar inside the holy place where the altar of incense is. And That's where they put the incense, and the Lord killed them there. And for this story, we must take it as face value. The Word of God does not interpret or explain it anywhere else, but right here in the 10th chapter of Leviticus and over in Numbers. Verse 1. Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took their respective firepans, and after putting fire in them, placed incense on it, and offered strange fire before the Lord, which He had not commanded them. And fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. Inside the tent of meeting, in that holy place, the altar of incense sat right there in front of the veil that separated the holy place from the Holy of Holies. Back in the Holy of Holies, behind that veil, was the Ark of the Covenant. We call it the Ark of the Tabernacle too. It rested there. And the Lord tabernacled there. He dwelt there behind that veil. And the acacia wood table that was covered with gold was beautiful. And incense was to be burned on that table continuously. And the Lord had instructed a certain blend of spices of incense that was to be burned on that table. And according to Exodus chapter 30, verses 7 through 8, the priests were to replace the coals and the incense at regular times through the day to make sure and keep that incense burning. But the issue in this passage with Nadab and Abihu was not the incense. All that mixture, it was not the incense. It was all right. It was the fire in the fire pan that was the problem. Now, some Bible versions translate these fire pans as censers. Now, for those who have come from a Catholic faith, you, in fact, everybody else too probably, has seen these little funky little towering little metal vessels that are hung with chains, and you see smoke billowing them as the priest swings them around. Well, that's not exactly the shape of the fire pans described here, but the function is similar. See, during the construction of the tabernacle complex, utensils to be used for the holy ceremonies, including the fire pans, they were hammered out of copper or bronze. And these fire pans were similar to what you might think is a 9-inch frying pan that you would have in your home. And it had a lid, and on top of that lid were holes. And so coals from the brazen altar, that sacred fire, were put inside that fire pan. Incense was put on top of the coals. The lid was put on top of the pan, and smoke would come out of those holes, seep through those holes to fill the room. Now the pan had a handle like a frying pan, and that's what it was used to carry it around because it was hot. So the issue was not the incense being used. It was not the pan being used. The issue was the fire being used. Where did Nadab and Abihu acquire the coals of fire that they used in their fire pan that they took into the holy place and set those fire pans on that altar of incense? Now, some commentators state that the fire on the brazen altar was started by the Lord, and it was the responsibility of the priest to keep the fire going eternally. And their scripture for that proof is found back in chapter 9, where we were last week, in verse 24, which states this: "The fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the portions of fat on that altar. And when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces." And you remember I said, here's what happened. They had offered all that on that first day of the ordination, and out from behind that veil of that temple, fire came out through the doors of that tabernacle and the tent of meeting and licked clean, dry, burning up everything of those offerings on that brazen altar. And these guys say, hey, that's when the fire started. Okay, well, that's okay. But the problem is that occurred on the eighth day of the ordination of the priest. It didn't occur on the first day. So 8 days earlier, sacrifices were made on the first day of the ordination. Where did the fire come on that first day to burn up those offerings? Because that burning happened on the eighth day. So did it go out between the 8 days of the week? Probably not. The fire on the brazen altar was probably set by Moses as he was the one who was commanding the full 8-day ceremony. And the fire that came out from the Lord had nothing to do with the original fire on the altar. However, back on that very first day of the ordination, Moses consecrated the altar. He probably set the fire and got it burning because he had the right to do it. And it constantly was being kept all week by Moses, and it was, and in the future is never to be extinguished. So where did the fire come from for the strange fire according to the Lord? Well, it came from some other fire source that did not originate with the consecrated fire set by Moses originally. Now, the boiling pots for the breast and for the thighs that were cooked, that we've discussed in the previous lessons, were not heated on the brazen altar. They didn't put a pot up there on the brazen altar to cook those things. They had them on a fire over here, and a fire over there, and a fire over here, someplace within sight of the holy courtyard. The leftover meats and the offerings that belonged to the priest were not cooked on the brazen altar. Everything that happened on the brazen altar was burnt to a crisp. So a fire would be here, a fire would be there, and it didn't matter because that was cooking the breast and boiling the thigh, or cooking or roasting the meat. Those fires were not acquired, didn't have to be acquired from the sacred fire. They started those fires, most likely. They struck them themselves as they needed them, and they did not have to stay perpetually going. So during the daylight hours, they'd start a fire, they cooked the meat and the grain for the meals of the priest. And the source of these fires was most likely not the fire from the brazen altar, because that fire was holy. And because of the place where this incident is found in the context of Leviticus and Numbers, it had to occur on the 8th day of the ordination. These two boys, men, were not priests very long. And they had made a terrible mistake. They'd been priests 8 days. And it was time for the altar of incense to be restocked with 2 new fire pans of incense. And they each went and got their fire pans, which was perfectly fine. They had them. They were beat out for them to use. And they stepped to the nearest fire, wherever it was, and it wasn't from the holy altar. And they filled their pans with hot coals. They added the incense. They put the top on it, on top of the pan. And the two boys proudly walked right into the holy place and put them on the altar of incense. I doubt they knew what hit them. Verse 2, again. And fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. There they died, in the sacred place, in the holy place, the place with the altar of incense, the table of showbread, and the menorah. And there stood Moses and Aaron, their father, with their two brothers. Those two priests were burnt dead on the ground. Moses and Aaron had to be shocked by the supernatural event they had just seen. What were they going to do? What were they going to do? The father of these boys, the uncle of these boys, what are they going to do? Then Moses said to Aaron, "It is what the Lord spoke, saying, 'By those who come near me, I will be treated as holy. And before all the people, I will be honored.' So Aaron, therefore, keep silent." In other words, keep your mouth shut, Aaron. "Brother, keep your mouth shut," Moses said, because they had done something unholy by bringing fire that was not the sacred fire into the holy place. So as the leader, Moses would say, "I'll handle these things," is what he would say. Verse 4. So Moses called also to Michel and Elzaphan, the sons of Aaron's uncle, Uzziel, and said to them, "Come forward, carry your relatives away from the front of the sanctuary to the outside of the camp." So they came forward. That means Moses and Aaron had to drag them out to the front of the sanctuary because they couldn't go in. Had they gone in, it would not have been good for them. They were not allowed. So they dragged them outside the camp. And so they came forward and carried them still in their tunics to the outside of the camp, in the still garments that they had, the priestly garments. They were burned in them. And as Moses had said, Meshel and Elzaphan were the second cousins of Nadab and Abihu. and Moses called them to duty. Time was not wasted as Nadab and Abihu were swept up and carried out of the camp. Mind you, the camp was not small. In order to get the bodies out of the camp, the men had to leave the courtyard of the tabernacle, pass through the living area of the Levites that surrounded the courtyard, and then they had to carry the bodies through one of the other tribal areas to get out of the whole campsite. It was a difficult task. And then we find Moses giving another warning to Aaron and his two remaining sons, telling them not to mourn the loss of Nadab and Abihu. If they did, the Lord would kill them. Verse 6. Then Moses said to Aaron and to his sons Eleazar and Ithamar, "Do not uncover your heads nor tear your clothes, so that you will not die, and that he will not become wrathful against all the congregation. But your kinsmen, the whole house of Israel, shall bewail the burning which the Lord has brought about. You shall not even go out from the doorway of the tent of meeting, or you will die. For the Lord's anointing oil is upon you." So they did according to the word of Moses. Now in those ancient times, people mourned not only with bewailing tears and grief, but they would also uncover their heads, tear their clothing. And although it's not mentioned here, they would throw dust and ashes into the people, into the air, and let it fall back on them, and they'd rock back and forth. And Aaron and Eleazar and Ithamar were wearing their priestly turbans and their priestly garments that had been anointed and consecrated for the work of the tabernacle complex for all generations to come. Every high priest would wear the same robe. Every other priest would wear the other robes. It would have been a sacrilege to cast their turbans onto the ground and tear their sacred garments. They were precious. They were holy. The Lord would surely kill them for that kind of response. And the rest of the nation of Israel, they could uncover their heads, they could tear their clothing, and they could bewail their relatives. But as for Aaron and his two sons, they had a job to do. They still had the original anointing oil on their head from when Moses poured it on them to ordain them. And their job was taking care of the business of the tabernacle. Other relatives could bury the dead. They were to care for the living, sinful as they may be. Then from behind the veil, while they're standing there in that holy place, on top of the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant, the Lord spoke to Aaron, saying to him, "Do not drink." Verse 8. The Lord then spoke to Aaron, saying, "Do not drink wine or strong drink, neither you nor your sons with you, when you come into the tent of meeting, so that you will not die. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations. And so as to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, and between the unclean and the clean, and so as to teach the sons of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them through Moses." The nation of Israel was a drinking nation. Wine was the common everyday drink of the common person, man, woman, boy, and girl, with every meal. Now, when I was a little boy attending church, when the word wine came up in the passage, the Baptist preacher would always say something like this: "Wine in those days was like our grape juice today. It was not like our wine that the winos drink on the streets." Those Baptist preachers that I grew up with were right, but most of them did not know why. And here's why. You see, in the Bible, there is a difference between wine and strong drink, as Moses asserts in this passage. Wine that is purchased today would be considered strong drink in the Bible. The Hebrew word for strong drink is shikar, and it applies to any beverage that has fermented to a state of having intoxicating qualities. That's what the Hebrew word means. An intoxicating wine was not easy to make by just crushing the grapes and waiting for them to ferment. The grapes were harvested in mid-September, about the right time for the temperature to be right. And so the time clock would start with the grapes being pressed and the wine pressing, and it would take several days for that to happen. And then they'd wait for the natural fermentating process to take place as the sugars in the grapes began to break down and the natural yeast that is in the air would fall on it and begin to introduce the fermentation process. Not such a sure way to guarantee that the pressed grape juice would turn to intoxicating beverages on demand, is it? But grape juice was in demand by all the Jews for every meal. And that is the point that I'm making here. And that is why the Lord told Aaron and his sons not to drink wine and not to drink strong drink when it was time for them to enter the duty as priests in the tabernacle complex. The normal wines of the ancient days, if they sat long enough to become strong drink, they would have impaired the ability of these priests to do their jobs, and the Lord was serious. Because they're getting one crop and they're trying to save that wine through the year until the next crop. And arriving to work as priest intoxicated brought an immediate death penalty from the Lord. It was the internal statute for all priests. But we also see the extra duties of the priest stated in a snapshot in this same passage. What were their duties? And so as to make distinction between the holy and the profane, and between the unclean and the clean, and so as to teach the sons of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them through Moses. Making a distinction between the holy and profane would be easy for the Israelites to understand. We've had enough instruction to know that. The holy would be all that the Lord had commanded the people to do. The profane would be anything that he in opposition to what his commands were. But then the Lord added the distinction between the unclean and the clean. Coming at this point in the story, we have seen the word clean and unclean several times, but with no instructions. For instance, chapter 4, verse 12, we are told that the remains of the animal would be burned outside the camp in a clean place. But what does that mean? What's clean in a dirty place? In chapter 5, verses 2 and 3, unclean things were not to be touched, such as the carcasses of beasts. But what makes a carcass of a beast unclean? Chapter 7, verse 19, nothing unclean was to be eaten. But what makes something unclean to eat? The clean and the unclean were not described or taught in the book of Exodus, and it's not been taught thus far in the book of Leviticus. Now, the book of Genesis is almost done. If it's not already done, it's likely it is completed by this time by Moses, but there is no description of what is clean and unclean in it. Deuteronomy is 39 years away. So what was clean and what was unclean that the priests were to teach as a perpetual statute had not been revealed by the Lord yet. Now the Lord just made those statements for the first time. And you know what, folks? We're going to have to wait until chapter 11 for those details to be revealed by Him. Be that as it may, the two sons were dead and the Lord took the opportunity to inform the priests that they had a job to do and they could not take the chance of being intoxicated when they were on the job. But that day, the day of the death of the two sons of Aaron on the eighth day of the ordination, Moses noticed a problem. The grain offering had not been eaten as required, verse 12. Then Moses spoke to Aaron and to his surviving sons, Eleazar and Ithamar. Take the grain offerings that is left over from the Lord's offering by fire, and eat it unleavened beside the altar, for it is most holy. You shall eat it. Moreover, in a holy place, because it is your due and your son's due out of the Lord's offerings by fire. For thus I have been commanded. So on the eighth day, Aaron and his sons, after being in the tent of meeting for 7 days, exited out of that tent for the first time to preside over for the first time over the final ceremony of the ordination. The elders had brought their grain offering, and they had handed it to them to put on the brazen altar to be consumed by the fire, just as the instructions demanded. But there was leftovers, and the leftover was to be eaten by the priest, and it had not been eaten by the priest. And Moses' sharp eye must have noticed that the grain was uneaten and promptly instructed Aaron and his sons to complete their duty in that part of the offering ceremony. It was required. Verse 14 is surely part of the instruction to eat the grain offering that was just addressed by Moses. But I have separated it here because in this study because of two reasons. First, those leftover grain offerings were to be eaten by the priest in a holy place. That's what it said. But second, starting in verse 14, we see an extended instruction for the wave offering, and it was to be eaten in a clean place. Verse 14. The breast of the wave offering, however, and the thigh of the offering you may eat in a clean place, you and your sons and your daughters with you, for they have been given as your due and your sons' due out of the sacrifices of the peace offering of the sons of Israel. The thigh offered by lifting up and the breast offered by waving, they shall bring along with the offerings by fire of the portions of the fat, to present as a wave offering before the Lord, so it shall be a thing perpetual to you and your sons with you, just as the Lord has commanded. Did you notice that breast and thigh offerings could be eaten by the sons and by the daughters too? This is new. In other words, we are learning that these wave offerings were for the whole priestly family to eat, male and female. But they were to be eaten in a clean place. Does it say a holy place? Anywhere inside the curtain fence of the tabernacle complex was considered a holy place. It is never called a clean place. That means the clean place must be outside the curtain area of the tabernacle complex, in their tribal areas, in the camp, in the living quarters of the priest that surrounded the tabernacle complex. Now here's a layout of the camp, and it is always the same no matter where they were camped. For Moses and Aaron and his sons, their living quarters were east of the door of the tabernacle. Here's the layout. There's the east. Wherever they move, they stop, they set up camp exactly this way. Judah's to the east, Zebulun here, Issachar there, Naphtali, Dan, Asher, Benjamin, Ephraim, Manasseh, Gad, Reuben, Simeon. Here is the tabernacle complex. Here is Moses and Aaron's camp here, Kohath here, Merari here, Gershon here. All of these are Levites. So they have to come outside of this holy area and eat it in this clean area somewhere, where they're going to eat it in this Levite area somewhere. And because it belongs to the priest, it can come out here and be right there in that tabernacle complex. Moses had handled the offering on the first day of the ordination, and those offerings were completed correctly according to the instruction of the Lord because Moses did it. But the offerings on the eighth day were completed by Aaron and his sons. And two of the sons had not followed the law of the fire in the fire pans, and they died. And Moses had discovered the failure of the grain and the wave offering to be eaten as required, and they had not been eaten. And with two wrongs, Moses noticed another major infraction. Verse 16. But Moses searched carefully for the goat in the sin offering, and behold, it had been burned up. So he was angry with Aaron's surviving sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, saying, "Why did you not eat the sin offering at the holy place? For it is most holy. And he gave it to you to bear away the guilt of the congregation, to make atonement for them before the Lord. Behold, since its blood had not been brought inside into the sanctuary, you should certainly have eaten it in the sanctuary, just as I commanded." So Moses accused Aaron and his sons of not following the commands of the Lord concerning this goat offering. It was a sin offering, and Moses found the burning goat and the hide outside the camp in a clean place burning. And he thundered back to Aaron and his sons and questioned them harshly. Why did you not eat the sin offering at the holy place? For it is most holy, and he gave it to you to bear away the guilt of the congregation to make atonement for them before the Lord. So the reason we took the time to review all those offerings at the beginning of this lesson was for this very sentence. In this very verse, Moses, in his panic, misjudged the goat offering on the eighth day. It was a sin offering. It was not a sin offering associated with a guilt offering, as Moses stated. In a sin offering, the basics of the ceremony is as follows. The priest takes the blood inside the tent. He sprinkles it in front of the veil. Seven times he rubs the four corners of the altar of incense with the blood. The priest pours the rest of the blood at the base of the brazen altar in the coals and ashes and stokes the fire. The person bringing the offering removes the fat portions. The fat portions are handed to the priest, who places them on the brazen altar where they are totally consumed, and the rest of the animal is taken outside, including the hide, and burned in a clean place outside. That is a sin offering. But with the guilt offering for sin, the sin portion of that guilt offering was different as follows. The person bringing the offering had to confess his sins. There was no confession on that day, by the way. The priest sprinkles the blood around the brazen altar. The priest pours the rest of the blood at the base of the brazen altar on top of the coals and the ashes, and he stokes the fire. The person bringing the offering removes the fat portions. The fat portions go to the priest. The priest puts them on the brazen altar, and the rest of the animal, including the hide, was given to the priest. That's what Moses thought was supposed to take place. Moses had spoken incorrectly about the goat offering on the eighth day. It was not a guilt offering, as Moses asserted. That is why Moses wanted to know why it was burned outside the camp instead of eaten. It was a sin offering given by the elders of the people, not a sin offering associated with guilt. It had been handled correctly by Aaron's sons. It was supposed to be burned outside the camp. So Aaron speaks up to his brother Moses, and Aaron says in verse 19, "But Aaron spoke to Moses, 'Behold, this very day they presented their sin offering and their burnt offering before the Lord. When things like these happened to me, if I had eaten a sin offering today, would it have been good in the sight of the Lord?'" So correctly, Aaron said to Moses that the elders presented a sin and a burnt offering. Aaron did not say that they presented a guilt offering, which has its own order of service. If Aaron had eaten the sin offering, he would have sinned. So with it being a sin offering instead of a guilt offering, Aaron asked Moses, if I had eaten a sin offering today, would it have been good in the sight of the Lord? So Moses' thought had to have quickly reviewed in his mind the differences between a sin offering and a guilt offering. Aaron was right. The goat offering was for sin, and it had been handled correctly. Moses was wrong, and Aaron corrected Moses. And we find Moses' answer in verse 20. When Moses heard that, it seemed good in his sight. Aaron had done what was good in Moses' sight, but also in the sight of the Lord. Aaron has kept the commands of the Lord. The eighth day was about to be over. It had been a full day with many ups and many downs, many joys and many heartaches. But it was no less over. It was time to hear an instruction from the Lord to determine what was clean and what was unclean in the sight of the Lord. It was time to learn those details in order that the priest could teach them to the people for generations to come. That we will discover in chapter 11 in our next lesson.